Good morning and welcome to the Morning Voice. It is September 23rd, 7:04 in the morning, and glad you joined us. I'm your host for the Civic Engagement Hour. That's the version of the Morning Voice on Tuesday. Matt Neely's behind the glass, keeping us on time and on target. Good morning, Matt.
Good morning, Ted. How are you?
I'm doing great. The Morning Voice, 5 days a week, five different hosts, five different personalities, if you want to put it that way, and also five different topic lines. A little bit of politics spread throughout most of those, maybe a little more on days like today and others in the past. But we appreciate you joining us during your drive time, or if you listen in from home or from the office. We really appreciate you supporting the Morning Voice. We believe we have the conversations about the local community that we need to have. And speaking of conversations, Matt, about the local community that we need to have, there's one that is just so far from a radio perspective, the gift that keeps on giving.
Okay.
Star Village.
Yeah. Well, they had the big public meeting last week, and the city's response, paraphrasing, was duly noted. We're going ahead with this anyway, right? So this is after a large press conference a week ago, and then a couple days after that, the public meeting with Councilmember Dahl.
Yeah, I heard some feedback on that. Sounds like they contained it, so it wasn't too raucous. It wasn't craziness, which we've seen a lot in public meetings lately.
Really?
In the city of Tucson, of things just kind of going out of control.
Right.
All the questions were asked by cards. You know, people had an opportunity to speak and tell them. And you're right. The basic message was, this is going forward. Now, mm-hmm. I did reach out to the city of Tucson, and I talked to some of the staff members there, including in the mayor's office. And you said it. It's going forward. One of the things they kept emphasizing me this is a pilot program. We expect there to be changes. We're learning as we go. We're going to try to make it better, but we are going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
This morning I woke up, and I think I've said it before, my morning ritual, one of the first things I do is I read the Arizona Daily Star. Cover to cover. Okay, I don't read all the articles, but I find the stuff I think is important for the show, for the community, and a lot of that exists in the opinion page. Today,
yeah,
we had dueling op-eds.
Pro Star Village and against Star Village, okay?
You nailed it. Karen Ulick wrote the Star Village pilot effort to aid most vulnerable
mm-hmm.
article.
Mm-hmm.
And you could probably guess who wrote Star Village Camp Puts Neighborhood in Dangerous Spots.
The organization who is out front on this issue and educating people on past attempts at doing something like this.
And that's the Tucson
Park.
Tucson Crime Free Coalition,
right.
And Josh Jacobson mm-hmm. And Monica and Kevin Daly all co-authored that one.
Mm-hmm.
They both, I mean, I understand the takes in it, but the one I want to address is there's one. It said this year in Karen Ulick's op-ed, it said this year a team from Tucson visited the new Phoenix location of a similar encampment.
Okay.
But it was really where they moved the zone to.
Yep.
Had more, about 300 people capable there. 300, realize the magnitude, 300 people capable there, because that's going to come up. And they also, as well as a smaller safe space in Las Cruces known as Hope Village. Well, I did the search online for Hope Village, and what I found is it's actually Camp Hope,
mm-hmm.
But it's different. And this is where I don't like when somebody says this is something we're modeling after. One of the complaints I've had for the city of Tucson on how they're handling it, whether it's is the amount of money they're spending, and they're having what I call a drop in the bucket impact on the issue and the problem.
Right.
And I understand, you know, Milagro on Oracle, over $20 million put into making that a facility, and 67 families, individuals, or lives are being touched. I get that. 67 folks are being helped.
Mm-hmm.
Little over $20 million total there. How much we're going to spend on Star Village, yet to be determined. But the plan is it's 25 people. Here's the challenge. They're comparing it to a program at Las Cruces. Now, all you got to do is a little research and you find out very interesting things. So Camp Hope is a supportive of the Housing First concept. It provides predominantly veterans, but not exclusively veterans, the opportunity to live in tents that have shower facilities and cooking facilities associated with them. It's a way of a transition. It's self-governing. Interesting enough,
mm-hmm.
self-governing. Like
mm-hmm.
all these encampments, whether people want to acknowledge them or not, they're all self-governing.
Great point.
They're all self-governing.
100-acre woods. They are all self-governing.
And all different types and styles of government in those encampments. We'll just leave it at that. But here's my challenge. We're modeling it after something that appears to be fairly successful in Las Cruces, is the case being made. Las Cruces, population, 110,000. Tucson, 538,000.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm, okay.
Greater metropolitan Las Cruces, 200,000. Greater Tucson, metropolitan Tucson, 1.1 million.
Right.
Here's where the kicker. The last point in time count for those sleeping in the streets in Las Cruces was 238.
Okay.
I think we've got a few more than 238 people mm-hmm. sleeping in our streets mm-hmm. and in our encampments and in our neighborhoods and our bushes.
Sure.
The magnitude is just different. And they're falling on the sword. And I won't say falling on the sword. They are making a huge issue that this Star Village, we're going to give it a chance. And then we believe we have the ability to replicate it. Let me go back to Camp Hope. Camp Hope, which currently has over 60 people okay. living in their encampment. 60 people. The piece of property it's on that's city-owned, 16.6 acres.
Wow. And so this one's just a couple-acre lot, right?
Right. It's just a couple-acre lot.
60 people living on having 16 acres.
Here is the key.
And here you're going to have 25 living on maybe an acre.
Here is the key. Do you know what is on that 16.6 acres? The Mesilla Valley Community of Hope. It is a facility for treatment. It is a facility for counseling.
So the gospel,
it's a facility,
like the equivalent of a gospel bingo. Rescue mission center of opportunity.
Bingo.
Okay.
That is what it is. It is the tent encampment
yeah.
and access to the remainder of the Mesa Valley Community of Hope is right next to that tent encampment on a 16.6 acre parcel of the city's of Las Cruces's
isn't
property.
That something?
So they're not comparable. Yes, the idea of providing tent shelters to some of the most vulnerable, and actually the Camp Hope focuses on veterans. But I understand that, and you won't get an argument with me about women and binary individuals. Those are probably some of the most vulnerable people in the current encampment environment.
Sure,
and the self-governance that goes on in those encampments.
Mm-hmm.
But we've really, Star Village has occupied a lot of our time on the show.
Right.
It's obviously occupied a lot of the city's time.
Mm-hmm.
It's being directed that it's going to happen. And I believe it's probably going to be a pilot. And it's probably going to morph over time. Maybe they'll even improve. But I want to know how you're going to take it to scale. Yeah. Nobody wants to address this issue we've got in our town at scale, where it's going to make a difference. I mean, even let's just something as simple as the enforcement of people standing on the medians. It worked for about a month.
Yeah.
Now they're all back. We still have folks getting hit by cars. We still have folks getting hit by vehicles. Right. We know it's safety issues. That my son and I were driving the other day, and there was somebody. I'm going to assume they were on fentanyl because mm-hmm. they were literally dancing and moving in and out of the street in a pair of shorts.
Oh, good Lord.
And I'm just going, this is not going to end good. This is not going to end well. We have an issue in this community, and it is huge. We've got to figure out a way to take it to scale. And a lot of the things that they don't like hearing that Tucson Crime Free does suggest
yeah.
is let's put facilities, transition centers. Let's use that. The city, you know, the transition center has proven successful coming right out of, we've got a bill that we're going to again try to run next year for the right. critical response centers that will allow us to keep people on drugs for fun. But the pushback predominantly last year, mm-hmm. not exclusively, mm-hmm. predominantly came from the Democrats in the Senate for sure. By the time it came over to the House, all of a sudden it had bipartisan support. I think we're going to have bipartisan support on running it this year. And we need cities and towns to speak up and say, this is important. We have to start addressing things with real solutions, and we have to be able to do them at scale. And the key is access to the services, like a Gospel Rescue Mission. Yes, in the city's mind, there may be some barriers. They have some requirements for the safety and for the benefit and for the success of the program at the Gospel Rescue Mission, but it works.
Yeah.
We've got to get something that works, and we've got to figure out how to take it to scale.
When I was talking to somebody over the weekend about, I guess, one of Bill Walton's big pushes in San Diego County near the MCRD, I guess he actually had a group put together that they were working with the MCRD to try to get some sort of an encampment, some sort of a sanctioned encampment with some structure in it near, believe it or not, the MCRD, which seems improbable, but I guess that's what the thing was. And then, you know, sadly he passed away. Yeah. But there was a big effort over there. Look, Ted, this is the thing. This thing was foisted upon those neighbors. Let me give you one example. The Broadway widening, that was decades, 30 years probably of public meetings and fighting over where they're going to put a chicane in Broadway, which business they're going to jog the road around. This went on for decades, Ted, literally decades, right? And multiple public meetings. The neighbors all came out and spoke at the Crime Free Coalition's event. They said, look, all of a sudden we were told this is going in. Okay. So for all of the
outreach,
fake outrage at the city staff and the city manager and the city and the mayor saying, oh, I'm giving Tim Tamir grace, implying that she's saying he did something very wrong and she's giving him unwarranted forgiveness, right? Over the whole Project Blue thing, right? And here we are, this thing, the city themselves, the ones who are saying, no, we've got to beat this thing to death publicly before we even think about making a move. They throw this on them. They say, hey, this is coming and you got to be ready.
Yeah, they will tell you there was outreach. They will tell you there's, but obviously you
don't have. But the neighborhood leaders stood up at that press conference and said, no, there wasn't.
You don't have as many.
So there are two versions of that story.
Especially in the Sugar Hill community, and that's right. The one that my understanding is it most closely
affects. There may have been neighborhood outreach in Ward 6 and Ward 1, but not in Ward 3 where the thing's going.
And are you going to tell me the input was to put it in Ward 3?
Right, that's right. That's my point.
Well, it's an issue in this town we have to take care of. We have to address, but we've got to figure out how to do it in scale. We've got to do it. And it's a combination of care, help, and support. And it's a combination of enforcement of current rules and regulations. By ignoring one, you don't push to the other. You've got to give people incentive for wanting to get help. And you've got to make sure you can get them in the state of mind that they can make that good decision.
That's right.
So there you go. Star Village, the topic that continues to give us plenty to talk about every morning when we start the Tuesday morning version of The Morning Voice. So you're listening to Ted Maxwell and Matt Neely. When we come back, we'll be joined by Heath Vescovi-Ciordi, the Economic Development Director for Pima County. Speaking of Project Blue. All right. 10:30 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm Ted Maxwell, your host, with Matt Neely behind the glass, taking care of all of our musical needs. The purpose of Tuesdays is the engagement hour, and it's to encourage you to get involved. We're a nation bound by shared values of freedom, liberty, and equality, and with that comes some rights and responsibilities. For some, that includes service to our country, and to other, service to our community. And our next guest, Heath Vescovi-Ciordi, I hope I pronounced that right. I've always...
Close.
Okay,
enough.
What is it?
The Ciordi, the C-H is
Ciordi.
A K, exactly.
Ah, that, you know, that's the first time I've ever heard that.
You know, it took me 30 years to get it, so I totally understand.
Yeah, that's, well, it's always one, you know, your name is one that just rolls.
Oh,
it
totally.
Rolls up. I mean, it can absolutely roll. So the Ciordi is, you know, but now Ciordi, it actually makes, that'll be a little easier. All right, so Heath Vescovi-Ciordi is with us today, the Economic Development Director for Pima County.
Yes, sir.
So we're going to get to the economic development side of the house. We'll probably get to some of the things that have been in the news and some other things after the bottom hour. But what I like to do in this program is always kind of introduce my guests, especially the first time they're here.
Sure.
And let them tell us about their story, how they got to where they are, how they got involved in the community. And we go from there. So where'd you grow up?
Absolutely.
First off?
Yeah. Well, number one, thanks for having me. This is really
Absolutely.
Cool. It's a lot of fun. So
it is fun. I enjoy this way too much.
Yeah, I can tell. I see your face through the windows.
Because I'm making all the big bucks off this. Yeah.
I got involved a long time ago, actually. So when I was younger, when I was 15, I actually knew that I wanted to go into public service. So that was just kind of a preconceived notion that I had developed at a very, very young age. How? I had no idea, other than the traditional.
What did your parents do?
So my mom did, well, for a long time, she took care of us as kids, right? She's a real estate agent. She's done commercial, residential, the whole nine yards. My dad used to run a company called United Beverage Company out here, which was a liquor wholesale distribution company.
Oh, yeah. That was a big one.
Yeah, so he ran the whole region area. And then later on in life, got into like septic and wastewater and sewer system construction and just did that for the rest of his time. Okay. So, yeah.
So you've got no idea what that young age knew you wanted to get involved in.
No clue where it came from. So, and then, you know, typically you're like, I just want to be president of the United States. And that sounded so attainable at the time. But as I grew up a little bit, went through high school, right, got into college and everything, I went to the University of Arizona. I did my undergrad and my master's there. Undergrad was political science and Spanish, and then my master's was in public administration. It was when I really started college that I figured out that serving at the local level was probably the best way to be able to give back to the community, right? So at that point, graduating from the U of A undergrad, went into the master's, got my master's of public admin. And then on the tail end, right before graduation, got an internship at the town of Marana. And that was an eye-opening and excellent experience because at the time, and really still to this day, you know, the organization itself is relatively small, you know, several hundred employees. I think at the time I was there around 300. So I had this internship, went into the, I got hired immediately thereafter, which was a huge weight.
It led to a job too. Good thing when an internship leads to employment.
Exactly. And Marana's famous for that, by the way. I'm never going to stop touting them in that program. Took a big weight off of my shoulders, not having to look for a job. And I got to go right in and do a little bit of everything as a management assistant. So that's what you do as a management assistant is special projects in every single department. So we triaged a ton of different things for a ton of different departments. And I really learned the lay of the land of how a local government works by being in there on the job, just doing the thing, right, every day. And it was economic development, workforce development, community development. There was stuff in engineering and finance and, you know, designated public lobbyists for the town for a point. I ended up running their airport for about a year and a half or 2 years. So just did this variety of work out there. And it was a thing where I keep saying, I think I did a little bit of everything except for be a judge and be a police officer. So huge amount of experience in a really condensed amount of time. And I was there for about 9 years. And then very fortunate that there was the position that opened up at Pima County in the Economic Development Department for the director. Applied for that, went through the whole process, and was very, very fortunate to get hired on. And that was 3.5 years ago.
It is kind of amazing to me because there are a lot of folks who serve now at other municipalities, other areas that actually cut their teeth in the public sphere in Marana.
Yes.
So Marana's actually been quite a feeder. And I love the idea how they gave you all that exposure. One, the airport. If you had anything to do with making the airport what it's the airport is today, it's a phenomenal airport out there. That's where we've got, I've got three partners. And that's where we keep our little old, you know, Bonanza aircraft, that single engine plane that fly out there. And it's a great airport. I love it. I'm not sure I'm excited about a tower coming, but it's needed.
I'm going to say I am excited about that tower because it is needed, and safety is priority one at any airport, so I think we'll take it.
Yeah, it's the pilot in me that just likes to I don't need people telling me where to go. I'll figure it out, and I'll get it on the ground. So before we go on to your economic development role, and we take a break at just almost at the dead bottom of the hour, so you know for timing. You also teach right now at the University of Arizona. You're an adjunct professor. What do you teach, just out of curiosity?
Yeah, so I actually teach economic development for public administration.
Okay, right? So then let's go to the public administration side since you work for a governmental agency in the economic development role. What is your role? You know, people hear about Suncor or now the Chamber of Southern Arizona and Joe Snell's organization. Mm-hmm. You know about the ACA. We hear all these other things. You hear chambers and business groups advocating for more growth. What is your role as a governmental?
It's relatively similar in some instances, right? But effectively what we're doing is representing the policy that's created, right, when it comes to economic development that's created by the Board of Supervisors. So as the policy-making body, they'll create policies, and then as the administrative staff, it's our responsibility to actualize those things and to create the results based off of that policy. So for me, it's the implementation of our Economic Development Strategic Plan, which is a policy document that was approved by our Board of Supervisors in 2023. It's also understanding what our, you know, desires and overall ethos are for economic development, but also for the county as a whole, as an organization. So that goes back directly to, stewardship of natural resources, public health, right, transportation, critical services that are delivered by the county, all of those different things. We mix the economic development into that. So really, it's kind of like community-based economic development in some form or fashion. But we do all of the traditional economic development things too. It's business attraction, it's retention and expansion. We get to dabble in workforce development because of our community and workforce development department and how analogous we can work. And then we work in infrastructure development too. So infrastructure planning to ready land, right, that we can utilize and deploy for economic development purposes and investments.
And God knows the county's got a lot of land. It really does. And I think that's something that I hope you continue to move into that direction. So how much input do you say you have with the board on helping craft this economic development plan?
Sure. So we actually went through a process with a third party, right? So this was an interactive experience for the better part of a year where we interviewed everybody throughout the community. It was academia, it was the board of supervisors, it was our economic development peers throughout the region, everybody that dabbles or touches it in some form or fashion. And then we ran that process through each individual board of supervisors' office. We then obviously take that back to the board for the approval of the plan. And then if they needed or have additional feedback at any given moment, right, we would take that feedback, incorporate it, and then we go back to the final and ultimate adoption of it. So they're directly involved in the creation of those plans.
Well, that's outstanding. I think a lot of people don't understand that. Mm-hmm. They don't understand that, you know, there's the county's got a team, the city's got the team, the right. chamber's got the team, there's state teams, you know, even some, there's some will tell you, the UA Tech Park's got a team. So there's a lot of difference. So when we come back, let's talk a little bit more about how all of those work together.
Let's do it.
And more about your community service.
Sounds great.
All right. That's the voice of Heath Vescovi Chiordi.
Nailed it.
All right.
Thank you,
we'll
sir.
Be back. Welcome back. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk. This show is The Morning Voice. It's Tuesday's engagement hour. I guess we call it engagement hour session difference. That's what we do. Okay. We talk about getting people involved, right, Matt?
Engagement like hours.
That. Hours. Yeah, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah. We got to go to hours because if we're only given an hour of entertainment, we're in trouble. So Heath Vescovi Chiordi is with me.
Sir.
The director of economic development at Pima County. So we were talking a lot in the first intro about how you got here. You recognized at a young age you want to do it. You went to school literally for, you know, in PA and outreach. So you're in your sweet spot. We were talking during the break, and you really do enjoy what you're doing. I think the biggest challenge people in this town have is nobody really understands it.
Sure.
There is a level, and it's intentional, it's got to be, and we might talk about this later, of secrecy with companies that come and look. Companies don't want people to know they're looking at different towns, and you don't want to get the public too early engaged on some issues. But I think what's got people really not confused, but they're recognizing it now because of Project Blue and what it went through, is there's so many different entities that play a part in economic development. Mm-hmm. So can you kind of divide that ecosystem and talk about how the ACA plays, how the Chamber of Southern Arizona plays your role, mm-hmm. you know, obviously, and the city and the, you know, the tech park maybe to some extent too. I don't know if that's still...
No, absolutely.
The university.
I would say first and foremost, if you want the most in-depth understanding of this, come out at my class next semester. You'll learn literally every single thing about economic development.
That may be one of the best plugs I've heard on this show yet. You know,
Demand stimulation. I like it.
Yes. If you really want the answer, come on at my class.
Please let me teach you. No, so you're right. It is very nuanced and it's very layered. So there is a role for everybody to play in economic development, right? So starting with the state level, right, the Arizona Commerce Authority, they play a very proactive role in creating and making an ecosystem that is good for business, right? There are tax implications to what happens when a business locates in Arizona. And there are all these different kind of spillover effects with the affordability component of locating a business, especially a very large one in the state of Arizona. That competitive edge, right, does bleed down into Southern Arizona because businesses can take advantage of those types of things. They also generate leads specifically. So they're out there pounding the pavement every single day, generating the opportunities that then come down to everybody across the state that we all effectively bid on, right? And to an extent, we are competing with one another, but when you come down to it, we're also working directly with one another all at the same time. And the county's purview is a little bit different, because if it comes onto county land, that's excellent, that we own for economic development. If it goes to Marana, amazing. Oro Valley, Saurita, City of South Tucson, unincorporated areas, because that is within the county and it benefits the whole county. It also benefits that an individual jurisdiction based off of what tax revenues are generated, et cetera, et cetera. So that's a win for everybody. Each one of those municipalities has their own economic development departments. They have their own directors. What we do in our department is to support them, never supplant them, because they've got their own initiatives. So we want to be complementary, not competitive in many different ways. In unincorporated areas, we support them because they don't have economic development departments. Typically, it's chambers that are doing that work out there. So we'll try to complement that and those efforts as well. And then you've got kind of the Chamber of Southern Arizona that's working in the policy advocacy space, as well as generating some of those leads too. And they have some different services. They also do marketing for the county also. So marketing the region to make sure that people understand and know what the value proposition is down here, which is extremely important. And then you've got the federal level, the Economic Development Administration, which is very important because there's a lot of grant opportunities that come through that. At least there were at some point. There's a reconfiguration happening like there is just across the board. Then you have Pima Community College. The training component, the certifications, the credentialing that they do are extremely important because workforce is one of the first two questions that we're asked about all the time. Then bring in University of Arizona, exact same thing, churning out graduates, engineering, finance, all these different things that we need to actually have the talent grown and stay here for those jobs that we're trying to create in the region. There's also research and development opportunities and confluence with the university, which is extremely strong and very, very important. It's also a Hispanic serving institution, which has served us very well in our endeavors in foreign direct investment across the border into Mexico, too. So that's kind of a crash course. And then Tech Park.
Was that your entire, you know?
That was all the class in 10 seconds,
there
basically.
It is.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then there's the Tech Park and UACI. So the incubator space and that Tech Park area is very important asset for us because it helps with our marketing, but they have very specific curriculum or programming, right, that we talked about. That really helps grow some of those technology-based companies here so that we can eventually find that next unicorn, right, which is a $1 billion valuation, and have them grown here in Tucson, in the region, so that they have that kind of connection directly to us.
So the tech park really helps attract or grow local startups, but also companies that may be early stage that need that kind of tech support and
Correct.
Some of those things to come out here and make Tucson their home.
And they also have kind of a global presence as well. So they have many international companies too that they work with. So it's not just stuff grown from here. It's actually attracting from the outside markets and then having them grow here as well. You could have a whole show just on the tech park and UACI alone.
We will. I'll get Carol Stewart out here and we'll do that. I'd be remiss as a host if I didn't just note something. You talked about all the different municipalities. You didn't mention the city of Tucson.
Well, that's because that's such a common thing for me to already be working for. So, or with, I should say. So the county, the city, Marana, Oro Valley, Saurita, City of South Tucson, all the incorporated areas work together in economic development. I'll give you an example. So the county's aerospace research campus is a fully fledged, basically shovel-ready development area. It's raw land and it's ready for build-to-suit opportunities. The county owns that land, but it is within the city of Tucson. So in order to make sure that we're putting our best foot forward, we work directly with the city on how we market that land, the companies that we're working to attract out there, and also the coordination on the utility side too, because if it's in the city, largely, they're going to be the water service provider. So they have to be involved as many steps of the way as possible to make sure that we've coordinated that and coalesced the right way. And then I didn't mention Tucson Electric Power and Trico. Our utility providers are 100% indispensable in this process as well.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I did not realize that the county actually owned land inside the city of Tucson as well. So you can bring development opportunities there, but obviously the city has some say on those opportunities.
And a wonderful opportunity, really quick, to kind of plug the county and the policy makers, because what they've done is, I think, very intelligent. They've designated land for economic development. They're looking at land for housing development. There's the conservation land system, which is land for conservation purposes. So they've kind of carved out all of these different types of land banks, if you will, for specific purposes so that there's a balance in what we're doing when it comes to development. There's the industrial side, there's the residential side, commercial side, all these different things to make sure that we're on an even keel, right? And making sure that we're maintaining those natural resources that we have, but also balancing growth intelligently too.
All right. So before we go to a break, I've got a question for you.
Sure.
What do you think is the current biggest impediment, and what would you fix to economic development in Pima County? We always, the woe is us, we're not doing what Maricopa's going. We don't want to be Maricopa, but again, a strong believer that we need to have economic development to make this a better community. What's that impediment and
I think that
you'd want to fix?
I think we can always work together better. And I think in that vein, probably more clear communication among county, city, incorporated municipalities, and how we leverage all of the assets that we have together, embracing individual identities of each of our communities, but also realizing that they're all contributing to the greater good or the whole of what is going to happen in the county.
Okay, I'll accept that as an answer. I would have suggested something like roads and infrastructure.
You would talk about roads. I know you would.
We've got to get that, and that the RTA next is the most important thing for this region. But we'll leave it at that. That's the voice of Heath Vescovi Chiordi. I still want to make
it
roll.
That sounded Italian.
I still want to make it roll, which is so bad. My wife would be kicking me right now because she says, "You're an English speaker. Say it in English. You don't have to try to do any accents on
it." You impressed
it.
Me.
So
I think
wrong.
That's good.
No, it's okay. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk. Stay with us. We've got one more session with the economic director of Pima County. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. Matt Neely behind the glass and Heath Vescovi Chiordi with me on this morning's and first engagement hour. The second engagement hour, Nick Mansour with the Democratic candidate for Arizona State Treasurer will be on, and we'll have a conversation with him about what got him piqued on that and why so many people are now announcing 2 years in advance. I haven't figured that one out yet, but that's not what we're talking about with Heath this morning. So I appreciate the time you're taking. I think you did a great laydown, but we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about some of the challenges and some of the recent events. And we'll just jump right in first with Project Blue, but I want to make sure to leave you time to tell me what you think the best opportunities are before we're done.
Absolutely.
Project Blue looked like it was rolling. Mm-hmm. Everything looked like it was going real well, and then it slowly became unraveled. Where do you think maybe the mistakes were made in that process, or what would have, with 2020 hindsight, what would have you maybe done different?
I think there's a difference in the level of kind of required public engagement and then going above and beyond, right, to a certain extent. So I think on the county side, we did the community engagement in the right way based off of the processes that we were going through, right, which led to an outcome on June 17th, which is when we took our purchase sale agreement to the Board of Supervisors. However, as you know, and a lot of people in the region know, we've kind of reformed things after that. So through Vice Chair Allen, we've looked at creating, and we have created, two new economic development policies, one that's focused on non-disclosure agreement use in economic development, and the other one that kind of provides enhanced due diligence in advance of a project so that we can gather more information and give that to the Board of Supervisors in some form or fashion that gives them much more information much more early on so that they can make decisions better in real time with more information.
And so maybe there's some case on the elected officials, but there were both all the economic development groups and, as I understand it, the two major players, the city of Tucson and the county,
sure,
had folks inside them that were aware of this effort years ago.
Sure.
It's not something that the chamber and you were running down in this corner, you got it through the county, then you opened it up. Everybody's been involved in this conversation.
Yeah, well, again, that goes back to the type of confluence that we talked about in working with our municipal partners in these types of projects, right? So in this particular instance, when it's looking at county-owned land, there's a very specific role for the county to play, right? We're the landowner, so there will be some type of agreement to get that land into their hands for development. That's pretty typical. I think the unique thing about this was that because it's county-owned land in unincorporated Pima County, the annexation component really drove a lot of the discussion as well internally due to the need for Tucson water service, annexation to get that required water service. So that's where the discussions, I think, really were the cornerstone between the county and the city on figuring out how that timeline worked contemporaneously with a purchase and with construction and with development and with permitting and with water service and with electricity service all simultaneously.
So was it the developer that was pushing for this need to have the incorporation, or was it something that the region thought it'd be a good idea? How did that come about?
So the annexation component is something that was out of necessity. So based off of the configuration of that development, right, and the needs for water, they would have to be annexed into the city to get the amount of water service that they needed in order to move okay. forward, right? So it wasn't kind of like a proclivity, oh, we want to be in the city because we want to be in the city. It was, we want to be in the city and we need to be in the city, so we'll try to be in the city.
Okay, but the project's still still alive. It's not, it may be still being called Project Blue. I don't know, you know, green, purple. It doesn't really matter. Sure. The project on that specific piece of land, which is a really unique piece of land because it sits within the paddle of Davis Monthan Air Force Base, which means there's only limited uses in there anyway. Mm-hmm. This fits.
So
it's still alive, though, correct?
It does fit. It is still alive. And the way that it fits is because we went through a specific planning process, right, to make sure that the uses do comply. And we actually got concurrence from Davis Monthan, right, to make sure that everything was on the level and okay with them, too, which was very important. We wouldn't do anything like that without reaching out to the partners in the region and saying, this is what's happening, here's what's going on. And if we need some type of concurrence or approval, getting that concurrence or approval. That was extremely important. I think at this moment in time, right, the project is still alive, but, and this is public knowledge, there have been executive sessions about this specific project, and that information I'm not privy to. It's information given from our attorney's office effectively to the board so that they can make an intelligent decision about how to proceed. And I work at the pleasure of the county administrator.
I understand. I won't put you in that kind
of
position.
Because this is exactly how it goes, though. That's exactly how it should be. If there is a need for additional information, we figure out a way to get that information. And then I'll go back to what I said earlier about this enhanced due diligence. Now we're hoping to get that information to them earlier instead of later, right? So that clarification, I think, is important.
I'm not sure if that would change any of the positions of the current board members. You still have two vocal board members who are against it in general because... And it's ironic because they're saying because the community has spoken.
Sure.
I would argue the community hasn't spoken. A vocal minority in the community has spoken very loudly. But now there's an opportunity that the city's not going to be involved in Project Blue because the annexation, because the change from water to a contained cooled system, which is all published in the press, so I'm
right.
not taking any secrets, is going to put in a position where they don't need the water. And, I mean, the city's lost an opportunity to extend the reclamation pipeline, their tax basis. There's a whole bunch of other things that went into it. And how important do you think, that may be putting you on a spot, how important do you think community outreach and community input into whether a company should be coming or not? There's going to be people here in this community.
Sure.
Just like there's people who are against taxation, there's going to be people in this community who also are always going to be against any type of growth. And if you let them speak... Are we giving them more weight than maybe the community as a whole thinks?
I think a couple things. Number one, part of my job is to give as much information to the board as possible, right? So they make those decisions. And I don't think about it as us letting anybody speak. Everybody has the right to speak and to weigh in on these things, right? As loudly or as quietly or as not at all, right? Just however they choose to voice their opinions on these types of things. I think it's unique because what it's done is it's kind of shed a light in ways that we can improve this process. And this is a really unique process too, because the size, the gravity of the project, the reach of it, and then also the fact that this affects the whole county to a certain extent really has the ability to draw in so many different voices from all across the region. That's why this was extremely unique. How we engage the people will depend on the processes that we're going through. If there's additional engagement through our supervisors, that's something they can opt into and choose, and we can facilitate that and help them. And then if for some reason the developer or the project themselves wants to engage the community, they can also go ahead and do those types of things.
So maybe it was also important because the importance that both the data centers and the open for business sign and the other things would be. 30 seconds. Where do you think our most opportunistic options in the future?
Sure. Geographically, our southeast area of the county is extremely important. Aerospace Research Campus, Southeast Employment Logistics Center, RITA 10, and the H2K site. And then from an industry standpoint, aerospace and defense continued, optics and photonics as an enabling technology for advanced manufacturing, and some spillover from semiconductor manufacturing up in Phoenix.
Perfect. Well, there's plenty to talk about. I'm going to ask you to come back again in the future.
I'll be back.
Thank you, Heath. Thank you for joining us.
Thank
everybody,
you.
You're listening to The Morning Voice on 1030, your trusted local news and talk station. Stay with us after the top of the hour. Good morning and welcome to The Morning Voice. It's Tuesday, September 23rd. The Morning Voice, 5 days a week, five different hosts, five different angles. Tomorrow, Grant Kruger will have food for thought. I'm hoping to have his guest by the end of the show to fill you in, to kind of wet your whistle for listening in. But we appreciate to everybody who joins and listens to The Morning Voice 5 days a week. I hope we bring you some entertainment. Hope you learn some things like we just discussed on economic development with Heath Vescovi-Chiardi from Pima County. Later this morning, we will have on with us is Nick Mansour, the Democratic candidate for Arizona State Treasurer. But first, if your assets aren't protected with the estate planning documents you need, you're putting yourselves, your life savings, and your loved ones' financial future at risk. But today, you'll learn five things you can do right now to bulletproof your estate, to ensure you're protected while you're alive, and that everything passes smoothly to the people you love when you're gone. So I want to welcome Chris Cohen to the show with RJP Estate Planning. Thanks, Chris. We appreciate you being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. RJP Estate Planning is the oldest and largest estate planning firm in Arizona. RJP's helped more than 40,000 Arizona families over the past 30 years. Chris, people who haven't created an estate plan yet probably know they need to, but it keeps getting pushed down their to-do list. Today, you're going to share five specific things people can do and do now to protect themselves and their families. So let's get right to it.
Yeah, thanks, Ted. At RJP Estate Planning, we've helped over 40,000 Arizona families protect what matters most. And for those who aren't sure where to start, we make that process easy and understandable. Here are five things you can do right now to protect your estate. Step one is to think about who you'd want to manage your finances and your medical care if you ever become incapacitated, whether from an accident, an illness, or the effects of aging. Once you've thought about that, the follow-up is naming your financial and medical powers of attorney. You can name one person for both roles or choose two different people. Step two is deciding who you want your assets to go to when you pass away. That includes your home, your bank accounts, CDs, retirement accounts like IRAs, everything. If you have children, maybe you want everything split equally, or maybe you want to leave more to one child, or provide for special needs. You can even choose how and when they receive their assets, right away, in monthly payments, or at specific milestones. To do all that, you need a key document called a living trust. A trust allows you to decide who gets what, when, and how. And unlike a will, a living trust can help you avoid probate court. That's important in Arizona. Because if you own a home and have only a will, your estate must go through probate, a legal process that could be time-consuming and expensive with probate and legal fees. So to recap, step one, choose your financial and medical power of attorney. Step two, decide who gets your assets and when using a living trust. And stay with us because in a moment, I'll share a special offer to help you get these important documents created at a deeply discounted rate.
Thanks, Chris. That's already incredibly helpful. So now that our listeners understand the importance of having a living trust and powers of attorney, what's next?
Step three is to schedule a consultation with an estate planning professional. At RJP Estate Planning, we offer a free, no-obligation consultation, often up to an hour or more, where you can ask questions, share your wishes, and find out exactly what you need. If you decide you're not ready yet, that's fine, but I strongly recommend you don't wait too long because life is unpredictable. Here's step four. Avoid burdening your family with having to settle your estate in probate court. Sadly, hospice nurses often tell us one of the most heartbreaking moments is hearing patients express regret that they never created an estate plan. They're already in physical pain, and now they're suffering emotionally, knowing it's too late to protect their families from stress, court delays, and legal fees. We all put things off, but this isn't like forgetting to water your plants. If you don't protect your assets in Arizona, the people you love may have to endure months or even years of court hearings, legal fees, and uncertainty, all during a time when they're grieving from losing you. The good news is, if you start today, you could have your entire estate plan completed within 4 to 6 weeks, and you and your family could finally have peace of mind.
Chris, that's such a powerful point. Having an estate plan doesn't just give us peace of mind as parents. It also gives our children reassurance and comfort during a very emotional time. So once a listener has had their fee consultation and decides to move forward, what's that final step?
Yeah, step five is finalizing and sharing your plan. Once your documents are completed, you'll receive a physical binder and a digital flash drive with your full estate plan. And as an RJP client, you'll also receive free annual reviews, legal updates, and free settlement support for your family when the time comes. That means when you pass, your family can call us, and we'll personally guide them through the process to ensure your assets are legally passed on quickly, privately, and correctly. I also recommend spending 15 to 20 minutes sharing the key details of your plan with the people involved, your powers of attorney, your beneficiaries who will be inheriting your assets, and anyone else named in your trust. You can give each person a copy of your plan on a flash drive and let them know where you've stored your estate planning binder. And most importantly, RJP's phone number will be listed in your plan to make it easy for your family to contact us for that free settlement support when the time comes. We'll guide them through the entire process of how to get their inheritance.
That's excellent advice, Chris, especially the sharing with your family and those peoples involved in your estate planning. So if you're healthy, this is the perfect time to protect yourself and your family's financial future. Chris, you mentioned our listeners can get everything they need at a discounted price.
Yes, thanks again for having me, Ted. Here's RJP's offer. If you're 60 or over, schedule a free consultation and you'll receive a 65% discount on your living trust. Plus, you'll get a living will and your financial medical power of attorney documents at no extra charge. Call RJP Estate Planning now at 520-441-4523. Schedule your free consultation to lock in your 65% savings. Call 520-441-4523.
Thanks, Chris, and thanks to everyone listening. If you've been putting off your estate plan, now's the time to protect your assets, your wishes, and the people you love. Call RJP Estate Planning today at 520-441-4523 to schedule your free consultation and take advantage of that limited time 65% savings if you're 60 or over. Again, call 520-441-4523. Chris, I appreciate you joining us on the show today, and I look forward to talking with you again soon.
Thanks, Ted.
All right. Have a great day, Chris.
I know.
We always want to thank RJP for coming on there with us every once in a while and reminding us the importance of that planning and what we do for our families. When we return from the break, we'll be joined by Nick Mansour, Democratic candidate for the Arizona State Office of Treasurer. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk. This is The Morning Voice. Matt, thanks for keeping me on time, on target. Great job mixing the tunes up. And anytime we get the Who on there, there's a lot of people that start shaking their head up and down and making it go. So that's great. I appreciate everybody being with us today. Now I'm joined by Nick Mansour, and I believe I've got that correct. It's spelled Mansour, but it is Mansour. Did I pronounce that correctly, Nick?
That's good enough, yes. Yeah, that's it, basically.
That was one of the questions I had for Ashton yesterday. Is okay, and we had a good text exchange. But I appreciate you joining us. We've met before because of your work, which we'll get to, and your history that led you to where you are now. And you've recently, I guess not recently now, it's been a couple months, you announced that you are going to run for the Office of Treasurer in the state of Arizona.
That's right.
So this program is this hour specifically, The Morning Voice, five days of the week, five different hosts. But Tuesdays, we focus on engagement and people getting involved. You know, everything from first responders, members of the military, people who serve their community through nonprofits, through almost any different ways. But quite often, it focuses around the political side of it, the elected officials. So you've made this move. But before we talk about why, I want to give everybody a little bit of your background. You're a third-generation Arizonan, and you were raised here in Tucson with two brothers and sisters, and service might be a little link into why you made the decision. It was a way of life in your family. because your mom was a nurse and your dad was a doctor.
That's right.
So coming out of that family, you know, here being raised in Tucson, what was your next steps? I believe you went up to Stanford, I believe.
Yeah.
For your education.
Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely.
Always great to be back in Tucson. I grew up here, as you said. I have one brother and two sisters.
gave you an extra brother.
That's okay. That's okay. He probably wished he had another brother, but I'm kidding. We are best friends. I went to South Point Catholic High School. Was fortunate enough to get into Stanford undergrad. Had a great time there. Was an engineering major, eventually, and then I actually went on to Stanford Business School too. But for the last 27 years, I have been an entrepreneur. I'm not a politician. I've never run for public office before. And at Arizona College, as you know, we grew the school from about 450 students to about 7,000, 7,500 students during my time. More important than that, we helped thousands of people become a nurse, which transforms their lives. And through them, we improved healthcare in Arizona and other communities around the country. And, you know, healthcare nursing is a critical need for Arizona. And so we're happy to play a role. And I should probably quickly add, I've been married for 27 years to my wife, Anne Marie. We have four kids, and we've been living in Phoenix for the last 15 years.
You don't want to leave that part.
No.
For the first time you're on the radio, if you weren't to mention the true support that you've got.
Absolutely.
And who, the person that makes you who you are, you might get in a little bit of trouble.
I do want to go home tonight.
So 27 years as an entrepreneur. Was it all with the Arizona College?
No, about half. Last 14 years was with Arizona College. Before that, I was running a fire and safety protection company, sprinklers and alarms. And before that, a septic services business of all things. So we could talk about that if you want to. There's a lot of stories that come out of that one. But
no, there's some we can take. We can leave that side. It's really kind of funny because if I recall, my last guest's parents got into the septic business as well.
Oh, really?
After a couple different other ventures. So it's a need.
It's a need.
We can't live without it. That's
true.
That is for sure. So can you tell the folks a little bit about Arizona College? Because you did take Arizona College and really expanded what they were doing. Yep. And you hit on such a critical need. They focused really on that healthcare sector and the nursing specifically.
Yep. So a group of investors and I got involved with Arizona College, like I said, 14, 15 years ago. At the time, it was one campus. It was up in Phoenix. No nursing. It was healthcare focused, medical assistants, dental assistants, which they still do today. But we eventually started a nursing program and realized that that's really where we should focus. So I'm not sure the exact numbers today, but over probably 95% of the students are in nursing today, and we grew it quite a bit. We opened 22, 23 campuses during my time in 13 or 14 different states. We've got a campus down here in Tucson, and in the process became one of the largest nursing schools in Arizona and around the country, and you know, we've got a lot of great partners here that have helped us in terms of hospitals and other healthcare providers. And like I said, the most meaningful part of it is you're helping people become a nurse. It's pretty hard to get into nursing schools. Our admission standards are pretty much the same as Arizona State and U of A's, but they have a cap on how many students are willing to admit. And so we help people that can't get into those schools.
Well, and there's definitely no doubt there is a need beyond the capability of the universities right now to provide in our healthcare field.
That's absolutely right.
And so that is incredibly important. And I know we had talked about that. We met, I think, 3 or 4 years ago and talked about what you were doing with the company and the expansion and everything, or the college.
Yeah.
Not a company.
Yeah.
But
college. Yeah.
Colleges and universities are companies. But that, you know, that's my take. So bottom line is you are rolling along. Things are going well.
Yes.
And then you decide that you're going to run for public office.
Yes.
What were you thinking? Why?
I actually get that reaction quite a bit. And I had a great run at Arizona College. I was there almost 14 years. Like I said, we grew it quite a bit. We brought in new management, and they're doing a good job. And really, Arizona's been great to me. I love Arizona, and I think there's just issues we need to address, and I think I can help do that, and that's why I'm running. And I could tell you kind of why, and I'll just segue into that, and you can cut me off or ask different questions.
Well, let's I want to dig a little bit more on, because some part of getting engaged is a mindset. Part of making that decision.
Yes.
You know, I'm going to assume you talked through your family with this. Was it something? Because it's your first run for public office.
Yes.
Is at a high level? It's a statewide election, a big race.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Anne Marie and I talked about it, and we talked about it. Our kids are adult kids, adult children. We all talked about it, and they're all behind it. And, you know, I think for me, well, when I was 40, I had a tumor the size of a golf ball in between my ears. And I was given, I was scheduled for 10-hour surgery, and which was going to be 5 weeks later. So I was given this opportunity to evaluate my life over that five-week period. We had four, our kids were age 10 and under. And honestly, Ted, you know, I know lots of people have health scares like this that can have a profound impact. For me, it's one of the best things that ever happened to me. And I came to several realizations. One is I enjoy helping people. That's really what I want to do. And at age 40, I didn't feel like I'd done enough of that. And I didn't want to get to 80 and feel the same way. And so, you know, I joined Arizona College by coincidence soon thereafter. Like I said, it's been a great 14-year run. And as I was, I'm now 56, as I was approaching 55, I began to think, you know, where is my time best spent? That I probably had one more chapter, and that chapter could either be at Arizona College or doing something else. And so my energy was just drawn to, if I can help, if I can serve, and this really is service, then I'm going to give it a shot. And that's why I'm doing it.
So why Treasurer?
Yeah, I think Treasurer, first of all, I think this office can do a lot more to help all Arizonans improve their lives. Times are tough. Things keep getting more expensive. Housing is not as cheap as it used to be, and hiring has slowed down a little bit. And I think we can get a lot more out of this office. So I'm going to focus on three things as Treasurer. One is driving our state's economic growth. A second is to increase our funding for education. And a third is to make sure we're being fiscally responsible with our resources and eliminating waste. And so those are the three priorities I have as Treasurer. I will say there's a fourth reason I'm running, and I think it's been underscored in the last couple of weeks. And by the way, Ted, people often laugh when I say this, but I am also running to restore some decency to our politics. You know, I think we are, at the moment, too focused on extremes. We don't focus enough on where we agree. And frankly, you know, we need to start pulling our communities back together again. And I mean, both at Arizona and obviously our country. And I think people chuckle because they agree with this thought. And we and everyone probably realizes it's not a one-person job, but I think I can help. And so that's why I'm doing this.
Well, you're going to step into an environment that's going to probably test you in a lot of ways.
Right.
Because it's, like you said, you're entering an environment of something you've now said you want to change.
Right.
The current political climate. 2 years. It's almost 2 years before the election.
Yeah.
Why did you decide to make the announcement so early?
Well, we're down to about a year at this point. But you're right. We did.
That's true.
13, 14 months or whatever. And we did announce a couple of months ago. And I was ready and we were ready. I've got a good team working with me. I was excited to get going. I know it's not easy to win a statewide race in Arizona. I expect it's going to be a close race. And so the sooner we get going, the better. And that's why we made the decision to announce.
So we were talking, you know, in the lobby right before this. I've always wondered why we elect a treasurer.
Yeah.
Why is that not an appointed position? So from your perspective, obviously it is an elected office.
Yeah.
Not trying to change that.
Yeah.
So somebody's going to have to run, but Why do you believe it's important that it's an elected position?
Yeah, and I don't know the history. I don't know why we set it up this way, but I do think it's interesting. I just came from a National Association of State Treasurers conference, and I think I was impressed with a number of the treasurers, and the ones that were the most impressive were really actively engaged on in their state legislatures, just as their governor was, and they were pushing their own ideas. And so I think that is a real benefit to having it be. And they made a point of these folks. They were also elected, and they made a point of saying, like, look, I'm not. I don't report to the governor. I have my own agenda. I'm sure they're working with their governors. But I think, you know, this is one of the things people kind of overlook in this job, that it is really a chance to have another elected person on your behalf trying to work on priorities at the legislature. You may not have as much power as the governor, but that doesn't mean you still can't get things done.
Well, it's a great point. A lot of people try to explain why we elect the mine inspector too. So there's, the fact of the matter is these are the offices that are up for people running for. And so that's what we're going to do. If you want more information on Nick, and he's going to stay with us through the break, you can go to mansour4arizona.com. That's MANSOUR4, as in spelling it out, Arizona, ARIZON.com. And we will be back to hear more from one of the treasurer candidates for next year's elections. Stay with us. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice, and thank you, Matt Neely, for that save. Sometimes the conversations on this side of the glass during the breaks can get going pretty much, and when I look over and Matt's giving me the look like, hey, put your headset back on. It's time to get going. So always appreciate you, Matt. I appreciate all your contributions. With us right now, we've got Nick Mansour, who's a Democratic candidate for the state treasurer's office of Arizona. He laid out his three priorities last time: economic growth, education funding, and fiscal responsibility. So we want to take some time now and expand on those. If you're interested and you'd like to give a call and ask him a question, since this is his first radio appearance, I told him might as well make it his first time he gets a call in question too. 520-790-2040 is our phone number if you want to join the conversation. So again, appreciate you coming down. I appreciate being the first radio show you're on.
Yeah.
But I guarantee you it won't be your last. The campaign trail can be hard. So three main focuses that you've got: the economic growth of Arizona, the increase in education funding, and the role that the treasurer's office plays in that, because you do manage all of our assets, not just the current budget. It's not about the budget. It's about the entire assets for the state of Arizona, and fiscal responsibility. So first off, can you kind of give the listeners an insight to how big is that those assets of the state of Arizona that you're managing as treasurer?
Yeah. The combined assets, I think, are around $31, $32 billion today. I don't know.
Billion. That's a B.
Billion, yeah.
And a lot of it land.
Well, and then there's the land.
Oh, then the land's on top of that.
That doesn't include the land, which actually doesn't fall underneath the treasurer. There's a state land department that reports to the governor. And the 31, 32.
So the treasurer is not responsible for the state land trust?
The treasurer does have some oversight into some of the transactions, but the actual day-to-day management of it, no.
All right. I don't want to jump into the weeds because we're getting to the weeds.
Yeah.
Let's talk about economic growth.
Yeah.
What's your vision and the role that you think as treasurer you could play?
I mean, I think one of the best things about Arizona is that we're growing. Growth means more and better jobs for everyone, for me, for my family, for you, for your family. It's just a great environment to be in. I've been a part of growing businesses, and it's just more fun. There's more opportunity. So, I think the way and Doug Ducey, I would say, was very good at this. I think the way the treasurer can work is twofold. One, you have to set an environment that is attractive to companies and businesses to come here. And, that means addressing some of our issues, for me, most notably education. But the second way is to work actively with state and local business development groups to bring those companies and jobs here. And I've built companies, I've created jobs, I can use that background. I understand how people think about these things. I can use that background to help drive that.
So in some ways, you envision the role, and you mentioned it early in the show as well, of the treasurer being another elected official who can have impact on issues, not just the managing the money. You see you as a treasurer having a voice.
For sure. And I think there have been others that have done that in the past. So yes, for sure.
So obviously you've worked under, or you mentioned Governor Ducey and
yeah.
what he did, and there was a
yeah.
lot of economic growth. He took it from a very business standpoint perspective.
Yes.
Now you're taking it from a business standpoint perspective as well. What do you believe your role as treasurer is to follow the governor's direction, whether that's Governor Hobbs or somebody from the Republican Party? What's your role as treasurer on this economic growth issue in working with the
yeah.
governor?
Yeah, I mean, as the treasurer, you are the state's chief financial officer. And, you know, I've been a CEO in companies and I had a chief financial officer. And I think the way it works best is there's a lot of communication, but if as a CEO, my chief financial officer thinks something's out of line or something needs to be addressed, that's what they're there for. So I would anticipate working very closely with whomever the governor is, and hopefully we're working together and we see things the same way. But if the case, that may not always be the case. And I think the treasurer does have, just as the attorney general and the secretary of state, they all have the ability to do that, and they do that. So I would think that'd be part of it too.
All right. So I know the next goal yeah. that you have in your campaign is yeah. near and dear to you. You've talked about the role of education and what you've done with Arizona College and
yeah.
others. So you said one of the things you'd be looking for is to work to increase education funding.
Right.
Can you give us some details on what your thoughts are on
yes.
that issue?
Yes. I think there's and this goes into fiscal responsibility too. So I can keep. I'm going to keep talking.
Oh, you can blend them all
yeah,
you want.
Yeah. Okay. So first and foremost, we have an endowment fund. This is what everybody should understand. We have a state endowment fund that is 100% for the benefit of education, and that is nine today. It's a little over $9 billion of that $31-32 billion. It's a lot of money, and there's two aspects that we should talk about regarding this. On the one hand is the investment of those funds, and in the other hand is the disbursement of those funds for our education. So I'm going to start by talking about the investment side of it. And this goes to what I call fiscal responsibility. So it's a $9 billion fund. We, Arizona, invest it differently than every other state that has a fund like this. And they earn more money than we do. Last year, if we had done what Texas, Wyoming, Utah, New Mexico, Oregon, or half a dozen other states do, we would have earned over $200 million more on that fund. 1 year alone, tax-free, nobody has to pay anything. Yeah, your eyebrows are raised. So put it another way, if we had changed our investment policy to do what those states do 10 or 11 years ago, our fund has grown from $5 billion to $9 billion today. But if we had done differently 10 or 11 years ago, it wouldn't be $9 billion. It would be $12 billion today. So that's almost $3 billion. We have to be using our resources more wisely than that, I guess is what I'd say. That's lost opportunity.
Do you see any additional risk
by
doing that?
Well, in any given year, sure. But over the long term, this is why all the other states do it. And that's what these funds are for the benefit of our future generations of Arizona. So we should really be investing this with a long-term perspective, which is what the other states are doing a better job at than we're doing.
So that's how you're going to, you mentioned there's two aspects to
yeah.
it. One's a trust fund.
Yeah.
So you just talked about how you were going to increase the funds available.
Yes.
How are you going to get them invested in education?
Yes. So that's the disbursement side. And 10 years ago, we as the voters passed an initiative that increased the disbursements from that fund. We had a 10-year period. That has now lapsed. That lapsed on July 1st. So this coming fiscal year, we have less money being dispersed from that endowment fund. And the legislature and the governor have made up most of that gap. But you know, I think everyone, I shouldn't say everyone, but I think the expectation is there'll be a new initiative on the ballot next November, November 26th, when I'm on the ballot as well. And the decision will be whether we increase the amount we're dispersing or we stick at the current 2.5%, which is now back to where we are. And so I would argue we should be above that 2.5%.
Well, that brings up a great point that might impact some of your campaign messaging.
Yes.
So obviously you're already starting a campaign. I mean, you're down here, you're down in Tucson today, meeting with groups and communities and stuff. I can assume you're going to be pretty vocal on your belief in what we're talking about is Prop 123.
Yes. Right.
On the support for putting that back in front of the voters. The legislature is not required to do it. They can continue to do the stopgap funding with the support of the governor, because the governor's part of the budget process as well.
Right.
But how's that going to play out in, as part of your campaign?
Yeah, I should add that the disbursements last year from that fund were nearly $500 million. So it's a significant source of funding for our education. By law, the legislature and the governor are required to fill $300 million of that. And of course, as the fund grows, that $500 billion could become more and more. If you take a step back, our education is ranked 50th. many people ask me, even below Mississippi, and I'm not taking any shots at Mississippi, but that's the reaction. And often, one person has pointed out, if you include Puerto Rico and Guam and some territories, we're actually ranked 53rd. And our students perform below average on the standardized tests. And our funding is 50th. So we are getting what we pay for. So this will be a part of the election. This will be a message that funding isn't the only thing that's going to solve our education. But it is a part of the solution. And this is an important source of funding. You know, I should add one other thing. At Arizona College for 14 years, I was trying to attract folks to Arizona. And there were a few concerns that were very, very common. One of which is, how hot is it? And that's actually the easy question to answer. But the second one was, how bad is the education there? So if we want to continue to attract companies and jobs and people, we need to address our education.
Nope, fully understand that one. So we're going to go to a break right now. But when we come back, I really want deep. Dive deeper into what you think your role in the fiscal responsibility is.
Yeah.
And how you would interact with the legislature, because that has a lot to do with the fiscal responsibility of the state of Arizona.
Yeah.
Okay. That was the voice of Nick Mansour, candidate for treasurer for the state of Arizona. Stay with us. We'll be right back and we'll talk about a little fiscal responsibility and how Arizona can get better. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Thank you for joining us with the Morning Voice. Tomorrow, Grant Krueger, after he does a CD7 special election breakdown. So if you are a CD7 voter and you still have your ballot and you haven't set it in, make sure you turn it in today. It's your last chance to determine who's going to represent you. Voting is our primary, one of our most sacred responsibilities and rights we have as American citizens. So if that's, you know, all because of your time and your business and your work, that's what you can do. Do that. That's very important. But tomorrow, pardon me, on Grant's show, he'll be joined after his special election breakdown. He'll be joined by Sergio Pinion, owner of the new Redbird Kitchen on 6th Street. And he'll also spend a lot of time diving into the laws, some of the new laws that will be going to effect on September 26th. So it's a waiting period after the general legislation, state legislators adjourn before those laws they voted on become law. But that date's coming up, and Grant, tomorrow on the Morning Voice, Food for Thought, will go over that. So you're going to have a good mix of politics and food discussion with Grant and Krueger.
Polls are
Krueger
open
tomorrow.
Until 7 o'clock, Ted. So we got to remind people that cast those ballots, 59 vote centers, and you can do so until 7 o'clock.
And where can they find the vote centers?
PMID.gov/394/elections. I don't know if we could have made that any more complicated, but I don't know where the 394
hey,
needs to be.
Who said voting's supposed to be easy? let's make. And if you want to learn more about our current guest,
drive around District 7 and look for a vote here sign, and that'd probably be a good indication.
Oh yeah,
58 of
districts. 59. Yeah, District 7. You talk a huge
it
district.
Is. Oh now, my! There's 59 vote centers just in Pima County.
Ah, there you go. Now that now you're, now you're talking. All right, get in your car if you've got your ballot. Make sure you've got it with you. Drive around, look for the vote here sign. If you want to learn more about our current guest who's running for Arizona State Treasurer, you need to go to Mansoor. Mansoor, yeah, get that right. Door. Mansoor.
Yep.
For Arizona.com. The important part's the spelling, MansoorArizona.com. And you can learn more about him. So, Nick, appreciate you joining us, the first radio show you've got. And so,
yep.
See if you want to, you know, get a copy of our thing and play it for everybody. Well, no, just kidding on that. But, fiscal responsibility,
yes.
Your third tenet, and yes. Probably in my opinion, one of the most important things that we need to learn to do as a government is to
right.
be fiscally responsible. Arizona's got a balanced budget.
Yes.
But is there room for improvement when it comes to fiscal responsibility?
Well, yes, and I would say our discussion around the endowment fund is an example of fiscal responsibility. But I'll give you another example, and you probably know this. You know, we have empowerment scholarship accounts, ESAs, vouchers, whatever you want to call them. A lot of that money goes from the state to private schools, but some of that money goes to homeschool kids. And in those cases, there is waste. You've probably seen some of this in the news. You know, your tax dollars, my tax dollars are going to pay for jewelry, SeaWorld trips, kitchen appliances, and other things like that. And, you know, that's waste. And so as the treasurer, there should be something we can do about that, something to stop that waste. That would be a good example of what I'm talking about. And look, we've got a huge budget. We've got to work with the legislature and the governor to make sure that we're budgeting our priorities correctly. So there's going to be other examples.
So on the ESA ones, in that case,
yeah.
You wouldn't necessarily be working with the legislature. You'd be working with the Department of Education.
Primarily, that's correct. Yes. Yes. Both the superintendent and the treasurer.
Yeah, sorry, the superintendent of education.
Yeah. Both of them are administrators of those accounts.
Okay. When it comes to the legislature.
Yes.
How do you believe they can be more fiscally responsible? Obviously, you've talked about it. The investment strategies are
yes.
key for the treasurer's office. Eliminating fiscal waste that you see occurring
yes.
throughout the state.
Yes.
But how do you go at the core of the things that the legislature does that maybe aren't the smartest moves?
Well, I'm focused on three. Okay. And one is that endowment fund. The other is the ESAs. And the third is what we also talked about, which is the disbursements from the endowment funds, Prop
okay.
1, 2, 3. And so those are all fiscal responsibility. And the third one, Prop 1, 2, 3, or whatever the proposition is going to be, is about, are we funding education enough? You know, one of the roles of a treasurer or a chief financial officer in a business is, are we putting money in the right priorities? Are we funding the right priorities correctly? And education is where I'm squarely, one of the things I'm squarely focused on.
Okay. I mentioned to you off there too, Senator Vince Leach, state senator, Republican, yep. representing LD 17, I'm already getting the wrap up. Do you think the idea of letting all the legislature spend out the funds so that the zero balance has no carryovers is a smart move? And you've got about 10 seconds.
I think it really depends on the year and what's going on and how much. So I can't answer it in 10 seconds.
No, that's a good answer. Sorry about that. I lost,
hey, thanks for having me
the
side
on the time. Well, absolutely. Appreciate you coming down. That's Nick Mensur running for Arizona State Treasurer in 2026. We have elections down here in 2025. Tucson's one of the few cities that does that, but we do. So look forward to hearing more about your campaign and seeing how it goes. Matt, thank you for all you've done back there, and stay with KVOI for When Tucson following this. Thanks, and have a great week.